I'm Karen Hartglass. You're listening to It's All About Food. And we're really swinging into summer now. It's June 25th, 2013. Beautiful outside in New York City, and it's one of my absolute favorite times. It doesn't last very long, but the linden trees are in bloom. Can you smell them from where you are? I hope so. It is the most fabulous aroma, the most fabulous fragrance, and it's very brief. It lasts about a week. And I'm very fortunate to have a linden tree growing tall just outside of my terrace. And I'm really enjoying that this week. And as I've mentioned a few times on this show lately, it's all about breathing. Because next to food, which is really essential, breathing is even more essential. And why not make it delicious by breathing in such beautiful, fragrant, linden-scented air? I'm happy. Now, I want to remind you, I'm the founder of responsibleeatingandliving.com. Please visit. We've always got some fun things going on there, making responsible eating and living fun, joyful, delicious, etc. And if you want to chat with me anytime, send me an email at info@realmeals.org. info@realmeals.org. Okay, now on to my first guest, Robin O'Brien. And she has been called the Food's Erin Brockovich by the New York Times and has been named by Shape Magazine as a woman to shape the world, by Forbes Magazine as one of 20 inspiring women to follow on Twitter, and by the Discovery Channel as one of its 15 top visionaries. She is a former food analyst, food industry analyst, author, mother of four, and founder of Allergy Kids Foundation. That's what we're going to be talking about today. A lot more about Robin can be found at her website, robinobrien.com, and allergykidsfoundation.org. Welcome to It's All About Food, Robin.
Thanks so much for having me.
So I was watching your TED Talk on your website, and you have a great story, and I think the best way to share the importance of anything really is through individual stories. That's what resonates most with people. So I'm sorry you had to go through what you went through, but it's wonderful what you're doing with your experience.
Well, you know, I think for so many of us, we have a wake-up call when it comes to our food supply, you know, and for some, it's a really hard one, can come in the form of a loved one with cancer or, you know, a child with allergies or asthma or some other condition, diabetes. But what we're realizing and what I'm realizing is I'm not the only one. I mean, we're really having a food awakening around the country right now as we realize how illiterate we've become when it comes to how our food is produced and what goes into it. And I think the more of us that really step forward and say, hey, I had no idea, and this is what I'm learning today, now, and this is how I'm going to make some changes and do some things differently, then it gives other people permission to do the same.
So just in brief, so my listeners know, and maybe we'll get more into it in a little bit, basically, you were a mother of four, I believe, and your youngest all of a sudden had an allergic reaction, and that started your entire new journey learning about what's in our food, how dangerous it can be, and what to do about it.
Absolutely. You know, and up until that point, I had just dismissed any concerns. I really was not sensitive to food allergies. I just trusted that everything on the grocery store shelves were fine, were safe, and it never occurred to me that there could be a different standard. I had covered the food industry as an analyst on a financial team, and so I understood very well the way the business model worked and how you could swap out real ingredients for these artificial ones to help drive profitability. But as I really started to investigate what had happened in the food supply, especially in the United States, I realized that we were using a whole bunch of artificial ingredients and artificial growth hormones and artificial dyes and all these artificial things that other countries had either banned or never allowed in the first place.
Did you know any of this before you started on your investigation about what was in our food?
No, not really. And I had plenty of people certainly try to tell me. I just wasn't ready to hear it. And, yeah, you know, I dismissed it as a hobby or lifestyle, the rich and famous, or some kind of, you know, alternative thing, really. And it really wasn't until, you know, I really dug into the business model and understood the financial incentives that were in place by the food industry and why they, you know, why they would use artificial ingredients. They're way cheaper to produce. But then to compare that to what was happening overseas and how our very own corporations were formulating their products differently for eaters in other countries, that to me was really, that double standard was really the point where I thought, you know, we have to demand the same change here in the U.S.
I want to linger on this a little bit longer because one of my frustrations is outreach, reaching out to people and getting them the information they need, because there are so many really smart people, well-educated, that don't want to know the information or don't know the information. And I'm just wondering, since you've been there and you've been through it, are there any tricks, or do we just make our steps, our baby steps? Some people are going to need some life-altering experience that's somewhat painful in order to get there. And is there a way that we can move the masses a little faster?
You know, I think we're seeing it. We're seeing it happen. And, you know, food is such a loaded issue, and it's emotional, it's social, it's cultural, it's economic. There's so many factors that influence food. And so, you know, when you suggest that somebody might want to navigate the grocery store differently, you know, that could be loaded with how their parents are going to respond, how their grandparents might have responded, you know, so it can trigger a lot more than just how you shop. And so, you know, I think one of the greatest things that we're seeing right now today is that, you know, retailers are responding for us. They're saying, you know, we see that there's growing concern over these artificial ingredients in our food supply. And we're starting to formulate our products differently. So Target, Safeway, Kroger, they're all rolling out product lines that are free from a lot of these artificial ingredients. And so I think, you know, it's not something that you can force on anyone. They have to come to it themselves. And, you know, it's a very loaded topic, but I think the more that the marketplace makes these products widely available, which is starting to happen, the easier it's going to become.
Okay, here's another thing. I have a background in chemical engineering, and one of the things that always frustrated me, I realize it in hindsight now, is when we would do these examples in class with a return on investment, and we would evaluate how good it was designing a certain business, but we never, ever include in it the social ramifications of any business. And as a food industry analyst, I know that that's not in the equation either. Don't we need to put that in the equation of a business, if it's really successful, that it should have some sort of social good to it rather than social bad?
You know, I think in a perfect world, if we had the chance right now to redefine capitalism, we would. I think, you know, when it was originally structured and what's called the fiduciary duty of these executives at any company, not just the food industry, any industry, their job is to drive shareholder return. And in the food industry, the best way to do that is to lower the cost of production and use cheaper ingredients. So that's their job. That's what they're paid to do. It's what their board of directors expects of them. You know, some companies like Annie's, for example, take a higher approach, and they say, you know, we're going to be mindful of the fact that we need these consumers and this planet for a while, and that if we, you know, externalize all of these costs, then that's going to limit our capacity in the future. And so you have these companies that are mindful of the future as well as focusing on the present. And, you know, we're starting to see that shift. But I think, you know, legally right now the problem is that it is their obligation to drive shareholder return. And until that legally is changed, it's what they're paid to do.
Yeah, that's the truth. That's all there is to it. I'm looking forward to some new kind of economic system, mindful capitalism, something like that. All right, now let's talk about what you have done since your... since the veil was lifted for you. So you were sitting there with your children. How old were they at the time when this all happened?
Oh, my goodness. They were 1, 3, 5, and 6. And today they're 8, 10, 12, and 13.
Wow.
So much has changed. You know, we've navigated the different stages of childhood. Now I have a teenage girl, and very mindful of the children learning to make these choices themselves, so that it wasn't some restriction that was placed on them. You know, that they could learn that they matter so much, and to really value and appreciate, you know, the choices that they make and how the food that they put into their bodies can affect them, you know, not only today, but over the long term. And so it was a real education for our entire family. And, you know, it didn't happen overnight. You don't potty train a kid overnight. You don't wean them from a sippy cup overnight. And so we started pretty slow. You know, we made gradual changes so that it didn't rock the family budget. We weren't changing grocery stores immediately. I mean, there was none of that. And as we started to introduce these changes, it was empowering, you know, and you realize that we're not going to make the perfect the enemy of the good, and we're going to focus on progress, not perfection. And so with that, you know, we were able to really incorporate these changes at a pace that we could digest.
Now, anyone can do that, and all of us should be doing that. But when you're hit with a crisis, there are some things where you have to respond immediately. So was it your one-year-old was allergic?
She was the one who had the immediate life-threatening reaction, you know, that raced us to the pediatrician on a Saturday. And that was sort of the wake-up call, because I didn't even know what a food allergy was, you know. Mm-hmm. And a food allergy is when your body sees food as foreign. And then I was thinking, well, so is there something foreign in the food that wasn't there when we were kids? And as I really was studying that over the first few months of her diagnosis, I really started to pay attention to the other kids, and I realized that there were issues that were going on with them that had not been flagged as being food-related, but were very much food-related. And so, you know, as I started looking at food allergies, I thought, you can have this immediate life-threatening reaction, or you can kind of have this delayed reaction that can manifest up to 3 days later. And so, you know, it was in that process that, you know, we really started to realize that that food can have such an incredible impact on the health of a child.
That's the really challenging thing, because some foods will affect us immediately, good or bad. Some will take a few days, some a few weeks sometimes, and some years. I noticed you have Dr. Joel Furman on your board of advisors, and he's one of my favorite. No, he's my favorite doctor, period. And he wrote a book, Disease Proof Your Child, mm-hmm. and talks about what happens in the womb and very early on with children that can affect them decades later.
Right, and I think, you know, as a mom, that's incredibly hard to hear, especially when you weren't making or you weren't aware of the choices and how they can impact your kids. I mean, that was so hard for me to hear, because you think, you know, I can't unwind that.
Yes, well,
once you learn, you can't unlearn this, and that's when you realize there is so much that you can do today to help protect the health of your kids tomorrow.
Well, the great thing is that the body is so forgiving. So once you take away the problems, in most cases, the body will totally heal and thrive.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So
and
you
I think,
don't...
you know, that's the part, you know, children, they have a long runway, you know,
right.
So there's plenty of opportunity.
Now, what was it one specific allergy your child had or more, and has it continued? Have you removed certain foods from the diet totally?
You know, for her, her immediate reaction that morning was to egg. And then with one of my sons, we realized that he had a real issue with dairy. And so, you know, as we started to sort of modify, you know, there were moments where I had no idea what alternatives there were to cow's milk. I mean, that was all I had known growing up. And, you know, to learn how to navigate the grocery store differently, where these products, where you could find them, you know, it was intimidating. And I think part of my work today is to help moms through that process, you know, to share that you're not the only one. You don't have to be intimidated. There's so many of us now that are sharing this work. And we did. We made, you know, some pretty big changes. I mean, I think the biggest was that we went from a pretty heavy processed fake food diet to food that were just, you know, foods that were made from real ingredients. And that shift in and of itself, you know, simplified so much, because we were eating foods that contained ingredients that we could pronounce, that my grandmother would have recognized, instead of all of these artificially engineered new things that, you know, came straight out of a laboratory.
Yeah, it's pretty scary what's out there. Pretty scary, all in the name of profit. Now, there are a lot of moms that don't want to hear this information, so I'm not exactly sure how you go about your outreach and information. What goes on at Allergy Kids Foundation?
You know, I was that mom, and so I always lead with that I didn't want to hear this, and I wanted to dismiss it, and it was hard enough to feed four little kids, and nobody wants to be told what to do or what to eat or what to feed their family. So I come at it with that understanding of how difficult this landscape is today and how we wish that the rules and the recipe books and everything that our mothers used could still somehow apply to us today. But when you look at the escalating rates of allergies and autism and asthma and diabetes and pediatric cancer, I mean, the game has changed. And I think once you just honor that with complete honesty, then people don't feel like you're preaching at them, that you're not trying to force a change on them, that you're simply saying, this is what I've learned, and I feel that it's a gift to have this knowledge now, and I'll share it like that, as if it's a gift that I want to share. And then people can take it if they want to.
That's right. Take it if you want it. If not, all the best. Yeah. I'm thinking about your kids now, and they're older, and you've given them some really great tools. Has there been any pushback along the way?
There definitely has, and there's been some sneaky stuff, you know. And you know, one of the things that I learned from the doctors that I've worked with is that, you know, acne and different skin issues, you know, from eczema to acne, can be the result of underlying, you know, food sensitivity or food allergy. And in our family, that's definitely the case with dairy. And one of the boys came in with this big spot on his nose and just could not believe it. What is this, Mom? You know, and I told him, and I said, what have you been eating at school? And then out it all came, you know, he'd been getting some yogurt and some granola, which, you know, is totally 100% fine for some kids.
Right.
But for a child that has a dairy allergy, it can trigger, you know, a lot of inflammatory conditions. And for my son, that's what it does. And so, you know, I let them experiment, but I also let them understand the consequences, you know, and that's what we've done every step of the way. You know, you're free to choose what you want to choose. But in doing that, you're also going to be dealing with these consequences of your choice. And so, you know, that's how we've gone about teaching them.
Yeah, I like it. It's important to empower kids with these kinds of tools. And one thing that many people don't realize, you mentioned that you didn't want to be told what to eat. You don't want to be told what to do. Americans, it's in our DNA. We don't want to be told what to do. We want complete freedom. And what so many people don't realize is how manipulated we are, how we're not free, how we're brainwashed by all the media around us, by all the signs and social networking and everything around us. And children especially are so manipulated to purchase things that aren't healthy for them. And it's really a challenge to let people know we're not telling you what to do. We're just telling you to open your eyes.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't want to hear any of that, you know, and I think that's where, you know, the food issue can be so much more than just food, is that you want to believe what you hear on TV. You want to believe that, you know, these agencies have kept it all in check. And they have, from their point of view, because they're relying on industry-funded research. And, you know, the federal agencies are in charge of overseeing the safety of these products. They don't have the budget to conduct the independent studies. And so, you know, they rely on this industry-funded research. And that, you know, when I learned that, I thought, it's not the first time that this has happened. This is what happened to my grandmother's generation with the tobacco industry, you know, where you got into this period of he said, she said science, where the industry was funding studies, and then independent studies came out sounding the alarm bells and saying something entirely different. And I think, you know, really that's where we are with a lot of these additives and a lot of these ingredients in our food supply today. And to see other countries exercise precaution and take the lead and say, you know, we don't like what we're seeing, so we're going to get it out, or, you know, there are no long-term studies, so we're not going to allow it in the first place, to exercise that same level of precaution here in the United States, to me just makes a lot of sense, not only to protect the health of our kids, but also to protect the health of our economy and our country.
One of the things I liked in your TED Talk is that you mentioned this, how important it is for each one of us to recognize that we can make significant change. Can we talk a little bit about more about that? I know that you had...
I believe that to my toes. You know, I think we're messaged, you know, along the way, we hear these messages in media and in magazines and on TV that we need this to be better, we need to have a better this or a better that. But I think what people need to remember is that you are this very unique design with a very unique set of skills and talents, and that's what you have to lend, you know, while you're here. And I think, you know, to really say, you know, what are your unique skills? What are the talents? What are the things that you're passionate about? And to combine those things together and use that to fuel your work in this movement, whatever it might be. You know, for some people, that collection of talents is going to lead them to start a food company. For other people, it might lead them to start a blog where they take pictures and share recipes. For somebody else, they might want to start a support group for kids with autism. There are so many ways to get involved and to lend your unique talent to restoring the health of our country.
Yeah, and I really think it's a very individual thing, and it's so important to do it at the grassroots local level where one person is sharing their story with another person. That's only how change happens, and so it's so important that all of us really reflect on that. And rather than complain, I live in a community where there's a lot of complaining going on, very impatient New Yorkers, but we all have to take that energy, that complaining energy, and think, you know, what can I do? Or at least how can I live my life the way that I think what life should be lived?
And I think, you know, again, it's just that's the inspiration, and all honesty, I mean, that's going to be what's sustainable. If you're doing something that you love, that leverages what you're already good at to help, you know, restore the health of our families and the health of our country. I mean, to me, that is one of the most patriotic things that anyone could be doing.
I'm reading your bio again, and you've certainly gotten a lot of recognition by many famous, respectable people, Yoko Ono, Robert Kennedy Jr., Ted Turner, Prince Charles, and... how do these people help move us along to a better place? We invest a lot of our energy believing in celebrities.
You know, I think it's all hands on deck, and I think everybody plays an enormous role. I mean, the celebrities aren't the ones that are prompting the guys at Target or the women at Safeway or the employees at Kroger to introduce a new product line. But, you know, maybe they have a platform that helps educate others, and that as we begin to drive that change in the grocery store, then those retailers respond to consumer demand. And I always say it's all hands on deck, and that, again, you know, all of us have a unique skill or unique attribute that we can bring to this. And, you know, in our culture where we do follow celebrities and they have this enormous power and this enormous influence, they can play a really incredible role, but so can the mom who is seeing every day on the front line what's happening to the health of these kids. I mean, you walk into any preschool and you see what is happening to the health of these kids.
Oh,
and
yeah.
So to me, you know, I always say it's all of us. It's all hands on deck.
Now, I imagine you're cooking a lot more since you've learned more about food.
Absolutely. I had to learn how to cook, and that was a bit of a train wreck stage, in all honesty. You know, I mean, I burnt a fair share of pancakes. I burnt a lot of things. You know, we experimented with a lot of things. And, you know, part of what I felt was this incredible insecurity that I had to do something perfectly or not at all.
Mm.
And, you know, as I moved through that, I thought, I don't ever want my kids to have this hurdle where they feel like they can't do this. And so that was, you know, kind of early on, I thought, I'm just going to have them at the kitchen counter with me, and we're going to learn how to do this together. And, you know, that's what's happened. And so, you know, last night when one of the boys is making the guacamole, he's hands off. He's telling everybody, I'm the chef, you know, I'm making this. And I think that part, to really arm them with the knowledge that they need so that they feel confident. And I think so much of the food movement is exactly that. It's saying, hey, you know, here I was. I didn't know how to cook. I didn't know any of this. I felt ignorant and vulnerable. And, you know, to say that's okay, you know, that this is all of us waking up together and we'll provide this safe place for people to come together and begin to make these changes.
Number one, find your kitchen. I always like to say that. Find your kitchen. Number two, learn how to use what's in there. And number three, get your children involved and empower them to learn while you're learning. That's that you can't do any better than that. I know so many parents don't want their kids in the kitchen. They think it gets in the way and they're trying to do things efficiently and say, no, I'm taking care of this. And that's really not a good thing. Everybody should be working together.
Well, you know, and it's not one size fits all. And for some people, you know, you've got to recognize there are so many different challenges and so many different constraints facing families today. You know, the landscape of food has changed, of childhood has changed, I mean, of families has changed, you know. And so to really focus on doing what you can where you are with what you have.
Sounds pretty good. What's your kids' favorite meal that you make for them or that you all make together?
Ding! You know, I mean, we got some pretty avid grillers. I grew up in Texas, so, you know, we tend to grill salmon with a husband from Seattle. And then all kinds of asparagus. But, you know, probably the biggest, most shocking aha moment for me as a mother who didn't know any of this was the crazy success of kale chips. You know, when someone first suggested that kids love it, I just completely rolled my eyes at her. I thought, there's no way. There is no way, you know. And yet to drizzle olive oil and sprinkle salt and pepper on kale and roast it in the oven at 400 for 15 minutes and to have that come out and be just totally demolished by a pack of kids, it really does speak to how, you know, you really can educate these kids and you can really influence what they choose and what they love and their taste preferences, you know, if you catch them early on.
There is nothing kale can't do. It's about my favorite food. But I have to admit, I have never had kale chips. I know that I see them everywhere and I know everybody's digging them, but I just like my kale unadulterated, raw in a salad, juiced in a smoothie, steamed. But as long as people are eating it, especially kids, that's a good thing. Robin, I wanted to thank you for joining me on It's All About Food and for your absolutely wonderful work.
Well, thank you so much, and thanks for the work that you're doing, too.
Okay. Have a great day.
You too.
Visit allergykidsfoundation.org for more about Robin O'Brien and her work. And now we're going to take a little break, and then we're going to have really fun time talking to Kristen LaJeunesse. We'll travel for vegan food. Yes.